This is Digital Story Podcast number 564, December 27th, 2016. Today's theme is Two Near Misses and a Hit. I'm Derek Story. The funny thing about life is that you can be rolling along just fine, then out of nowhere, everything is turned upside down. This week's show features two such incidents that result in a happy ending, plus one case where a good situation was made even better, thanks to technology. I hope you enjoy the show. Most of the time, we're complaining about tech, right? The crashing computer that loses an hour's worth of work, dreadfully slow Wi-Fi at a hotel, especially when you have a deadline, and dropped calls in the middle of an important conversation. These are all frustrating examples. But sometimes our robotic companions can save the day too, or at least vastly improve it. And I have three such stories that happened to me recently. And I think you'll get a kick out of these and probably can relate to them also. Drobo to the rescue. So this happened really just like a week ago. And I had been out doing some errands on my bike. And I was feeling pretty good. And the rain had stopped and I was getting some fresh air and being very productive. I had about three or four things lined up on my route. And as I was circling back, the phone started ringing. So I felt it vibrating, but I was at a point where I couldn't answer it. So by the time I was able to pull over, yeah, I do that. I was just like a car. I pull over and answered it. It was too late, but it went to voicemail. And the voicemail was not panicked, but certainly intense call from a client. And they needed a photo, a high-resolution version of the photo that I had done for them about 2 years ago on one of the jobs we did together. The deadline was like an hour and 15 minutes, something like that. We need it by 4 o'clock. And it was about 2:45 at this time. So I go, okay. I didn't have a lot to work on. All I had was the file name and the name of the shoot, the people that we were shooting. So I made post haste back to the studio, pedaled back, and went upstairs. And I have a couple Drobos set up that have all my archive material on it. But the first thing I had to do was, you know, let's figure out when we shot this, right? So I went to my calendar, went to iCal, and I just entered the name of the subject of the shoot, which happened to be a company. And so I entered it, and fortunately, I had been good that day, and I said, I'm doing this shoot at 9 a.m., and I had it in my calendar, and I got the exact date of the photo shoot, which was about 2 years ago. So I go, okay, good. Now I have a date. I have something to work with. So I fired up the Drobos, and I started digging around. Now, what's difficult about these sort of things, and this is something that you can probably relate to, is that, you know, I've been doing Capture One for all of 2016, but in 2015, I started making the transition out of Aperture. So I tried to put everything in Aperture, but I was experimenting with other software, trying to figure out where I was going to go, all that. So you can just imagine, I'm going, oh, gosh, I bet this thing fell right in the middle of all that mishmash. So I'm digging around on the Drobo. And the nice thing about the Drobos I have a 5D and a 5D Turbo. This was on the 5D. It was on the older one. But it's fast. It's fast. So it responds. So when I'm looking for stuff, the searches are quick and all that. Sure enough, this shoot had fallen in the mishmash, so to speak. It wasn't an Aperture library, but it wasn't. I used to do Aperture libraries for 2012, 2013, 14, all that. It wasn't in the annual one. I opened up the annual one and did some searching, and it didn't show. The name didn't show up. It's like, oh no, where is it? So I'm still digging around on the Drobo, and I had created some individual libraries because I was testing other software with them, you know, like importing from Aperture to Capture One, stuff like that. And to my own advice, I never want to do that with like this giant library. You want to do it with a smaller library. Well, this had happened to be one of the smaller libraries I was testing with. So the clock is ticking, tick, tick, tick. It wasn't out loud, but it was in my brain. And so I'm searching, I'm looking, I still can't find this thing. I go, where is it? So I found a library from about that time frame that had my client's name on it. And I go, okay, let me open that up. So I open it up, and sure enough, that photo shoot was in there. So then all I had to do was use Aperture's file search. I had the image number. They had the image number. They just didn't have the high resolution version of the image. They just had a low res. I used the image number and located the shot. When I saw that shot come up, I was so happy. So all they wanted was a high res version. So I didn't have to do anything else to it. They didn't have to do any of the work, anything. So I exported it out at full resolution. I had shot it with the 5D Mark II, which I tend to use for this particular client because they do a lot of billboards and stuff. Exported it out and then sent it to them. And when I hit the button, I had till 4 o'clock. And they said that this was a hard deadline. So something must have been going on. It was right before Christmas, you know, all this kind of stuff. I hit the button and send it. And the timestamp on the email when it sent was 3:57. So I go, oh gosh, that was so close. So I sent it off and then I waited and I was sort of expecting to hear back from them right away. Like, oh, thank God you found it, you know, or something like that. There was nothing. There was silence, radio silence. And I got, uh-oh, what's going on? And then I started telling myself, okay, so they were in a rush. They got it. So they're just doing whatever they have to do and they will write me back when they come back up for air. So that's what I'm thinking. And I think that's probably the case. So then I waited like another 20 minutes. I did something else. Still nothing. So then what I decided to do is just send them an email just to make sure they got it. So I sent them another email, just making sure that you got the file that I sent at 3:57. Is everything okay? They must have worked through whatever they're working through because about 10 minutes after that second email, I got an email from them saying, yes, we got it. We got it in time. And you're the man, which is really what you want to hear from your client. Now, I know to you that 2 years probably doesn't sound like a long time to find a photo, a particular photo. But for me, that is so long ago because I do so many shoots and I accumulate so many photos and and I do so many things that 2 years ago is really a long time ago. So the fact that the capacity of my Drobo, first of all, is holding multiple years worth of work. And this particular Drobo, I have work going back to 2011 on it, which is pretty nifty when you think about it. So the fact that I had a Drobo that was big enough, and I have expanded this Drobo twice. The drives I have in it now are not the drives I started with. I have put bigger drives in and expanded it twice so that it could continue to be in service. One Drobo, one drive had what I needed. And then the fact that I could use my iCal calendar and basic search and a little bit of knowledge about my libraries for both Aperture and Capture One Pro is a bit later. And I could pull that all together and get that image to that client in really about an hour because I had to come out of the cold from where I was on the bike. That to me feels good. And that to me is, you know, technology, you know, working for me, allowing me to do that and allowing me to pull that up. And this is even technology operating in a transition phase when I was being booted out of Aperture and having to find something else. In the days where it was just Aperture, I would have just had to pull up that library from that year, do a search on the file name, and it would have come right up. It would have been even easier. But even in a transition year, it still worked out. And that made me feel good. That makes me feel like a professional photographer. Exit now. So this was interesting to me. We were on a road trip in Southern California because I have family down there. And, you know, when you're in Southern California, you're like driving all the time. That's what you do in Southern California. You just drive everywhere. We had been out visiting and we were heading back to my sister's house. We were staying at my sister's house, who lives in Huntington Beach. And it was really great. She's in Texas right now. And so, you know, different people are house sitting and managing the house while she's in Texas. And we were there during this particular stint. So we're coming back and we're just rolling along and finally having a day where the traffic wasn't horrible, because we had been through some horrible days with traffic. I mean, just soul-crushing traffic that just, you know, just really kills the mood and wears you out. So we were rolling along pretty fine. I keep navigation going and I use both Apple Maps and Google Maps, depending on the situation and really depending on the results that they're giving me. But I use them both these days. And Apple Maps has come a long ways from its first release. I think it's really good now. And there was a time when, you know, none of us could say that. But these days, it's doing really a great job of not only giving me, you know, good routes, but also keeping an eye on the traffic and letting me know when something goes amiss. So the way that it usually goes, if something goes amiss on the freeway, is that it'll say, hey, you know what, we have this alternate route because, you know, the route that you're on has whatever, an accident or some sort of thing. And if you take this route, it'll save you 15 minutes. I mean, that's the way it normally goes. I've used that many times. It's really nice. I love that feature. But we were driving along this days, and I had navigation on, and it just goes, exit right now. I mean, the next exit was like Harbor. It says, exit Harbor. And I'm just going, like, I could see the sign for Harbor, right? And we're rolling along, and I go, what the heck? And so I just had to make this split-minute decision, just like top of mind. And I just went with it. I said, I'm going with this. I said, get off at Harbor. And, you know, everyone's going, why, what's wrong? I just said, get off at Harbor. So we got off at Harbor. And right as we're getting off Harbor, you're sort of going up like you do on the exit ramp sometimes. We're going up, we could see up 405 a bit. And what had happened, and we didn't find this out till later that night, actually watching the news, found out what actually happened. But what had happened was an oil tanker on the freeway and a minivan had lost control and run into the oil tanker and wedged up on the left side of it. It actually was lifting the tanker up, the trailer part of it. And then what had happened, a BMW was running alongside the tanker on the right. And so when the tanker started to tilt, it landed on the BMW and it kept it from falling all the way over. But of course, at this point, everything stops. And then to make matters slightly weirder, then the whole thing just angled a bit sideways. So not only was it closing one or two lanes, it was closing like all the lanes. So here they had this oil tanker running perpendicular to the freeway with a minivan lodged under it on one side and a BMW on the other side. This is what we saw in the news. Everything stopped. And not only did everything stop, it stayed stopped for hours, because, you know, right away, I mean, the freeway, there are so many cars on the freeway in Southern California. The minute anything happens to one lane, it's a killer, right? But to close all the lanes, it just started to back up. So as we're going up this exit ramp on Harbor, we get a look up the road and we just see this ocean of red taillights, just solid red taillights not moving. And then we went up over the overpass where we could get another look as we got onto Harbor Boulevard. And we just saw, for as far as we could see, no cars were moving, nothing. And I'm just going, wow, that's crazy. And I mean, usually I get this sort of option sort of thing. I don't know if I had missed it, you know, where they said, hey, there's an alternate route or whatever. But I just, all I heard was exit now. And of course, we made that split minute decision. So we went up harbor. We had probably, we're just a couple miles away from where we're supposed to exit anyway. So we went up harbor and drove about 15 minutes on surface streets. And they weren't jammed yet because no one else got off. And so we had 15 minutes of surface streets and got to the house in great shape. First of all, we knew we had dodged a bullet at that moment. But then watching the news that night and seeing, you know, what kind of, I mean, I would probably still be on the freeway right now. So this is a case where navigation technology and how it's evolved to, you know, not only does it get it where we want to go, but it keeps an eye out for what's happening on the roads as we're driving and offers us alternatives when things go wrong. This is a big deal. I think this is a huge improvement in technology. And there are many times where it has made my life a lot better, and no time more than this instance on the 405 in Southern California. Family bonding. The holidays are interesting time of year. And if you have families like I do, I have a modest-sized family on both sides, I'm fascinated by the holidays because a lot of the people you only see during the holidays, you know, family members. Now, I have, you know, close family members I see more often, but a lot of times there are folks that you see once or twice a year, and holidays are one of the time. So when they walk in the door, and in this case on Christmas Eve, when they walk in the door, they have a whole year's worth of stuff, highs and lows, riding on their shoulders as they walk in the door. And you put all these people in one house, and you don't really know what to expect. I mean, for the most part, I think everyone's coming to have a good time, but then there's inner family stuff and all that kind of thing. So I'm always looking for things, and I think most people in our family are looking for things to sort of bring us together. And so we have games that we play that are good. They're kind of traditional family games, stuff like that. And they're nice because they sort of, you know, break the ice and get things going. But one of the things that I've done over the years, and one thing that I always advocate because I just think it's so important, is that I always make sure there's a big group shot sometime during the evening. For everyone that's there gets in that group shot. And I think these are so important. I think these are just really important, you know, bits of family history. Normally in the pre-holiday shows, I advocate it. I sometimes feel like that I hit these things too hard or I say them too often. So I'll take a break from them. This year I didn't hit it as hard. I talked about other things. Next year I'll probably hit it hard again. But anyway, this is a big deal. And, you know, people in the family expect it. Now, normally what I do is, you know, I'll take the shot and then I'll pick out the best one. And then I'll clean it up a bit, and then a few days later, send it out to everyone's email. And this year, I was just going, you know what? The technology I have access to is better than that. I don't have to do that anymore. So what I wanted to do was shoot the shot and then have it on everyone's mobile devices, because everyone's got a mobile device in their pocket. Have it on everyone's mobile devices just like right away, that night. And not only just one shot, but a couple shots so that they can pick the one that they want. I said, my camera's good enough and I'm good enough and the technology is good enough where I don't have to worry about touching it up and doing all this stuff. That's what I decided to do. So I set the camera up and my house is two stories and is really great. I love this house because it has a staircase that, you know, bends around. The bedrooms are upstairs. But then from the top of the staircase and from the landing on the staircase where you do the angled turn, you have a view down into the what we call the library, or it's like the entry room. You have a nice angle on it. So I can set the camera upstairs and have it point down, and then I can get a whole bunch of people in the shot. I just love it. And I like that angle and the whole deal about it. It's just a cool shot. So I set up my Olympus EM5 Mark II, and I had the Panasonic 20mm f1.7 mounted on it, 12-second self-timer. I could do the thing where I trip the remote from my iPhone, but I like the 12-second self-timer. And the reason why I like it better than tripping it remotely from my iPhone is that you know, there's this anticipation. Am I going to make it down the stairs in time and get into position before the 12 seconds is up? And it gets, it really raises the energy of the shot. You know, then sometimes I make it, sometimes I don't. You know, it's a little bit of drama. And so I stick with the self-timer instead of the remote for that very reason. The energy is just better because everyone's kind of, you know, they're counting down and they're doing the whole thing. It's really a lot of fun. So I do the self-timer and I race down the stairs and get in the shot. We do this three times. And the first time I didn't make it in time. I don't know what was wrong with me. I was lollygagging, I guess. So I'm just kind of this blur entering the frame. So that one's no good, but the other two, I made it no problem at all. So I had two really good shots. Now I'm shooting RAW plus JPEG on the EM5 Mark II, and I'm shooting super fine on the JPEG. So that is a good JPEG that I have on the camera. So then what I did was I turned on Wi-Fi on the camera and sent the two shots to my iPhone. And when they send those shots, they send them at 2048 resolution. So 2048 on the longest side. So that's a nice size. It's nice enough to make a print if you want, but it's not so big that it clogs up everyone's email, especially when we're there, you know, mobily. I got the shot on my phone, and I started email with the addresses that I had with the two shots attached. And then I went around to folks, you know, whose email I didn't have, or wasn't sure if I had the current version. And I said, I just handed them my iPhone and I said, enter your email. And they would enter their email and then I'd do the next person, next person. And I made sure I got everyone in the room. I made sure that they had their email in there. And if it was husband and wife, I got both the husband and the wife's email because, you know, this is something I actually feel slightly strongly about is that the husband should get a shot and the wife should get a shot. And then they can decide what they want to do with it. I got everyone's email. And then I hit the send button. And I told her, okay, I'm hitting send now. I have everyone's email. And it was so cool. So then you start hearing ding, ding, you know, as it's arriving on people's phones. And everyone's checking it out. And then it started this whole other discussion, you know, really between which one did we like better? Did we like the first one or the second one better? And everyone was looking at it and they're pulling them up. And it was like this really neat moment because they had just experienced the shot, which was fun in itself. And now they were experiencing the result of the shot and actually being able to have a discussion about it and seeing it right there in real time. And I was just thinking, photography technology is just so wonderful right now. You know, there's so many things. First of all, that JPEG was good enough to where I didn't have to do any retouching. The Olympus produces beautiful JPEGs, and I could just send it and not worry about my reputation as a photographer. Sounds silly, but it's not. So first of all, that is cool. That Panasonic lens, you know, that 20mm f1.7, shoot it wide open, beautiful sharp image. That's cool. Wi-Fi to my iPhone. That is definitely cool. My iPhone being able to manage the shots, save them to my camera roll, and then email them out to everyone. That's cool. Everyone having phones in their pocket so that they could receive them and enjoy them and look at a high resolution version of it. That's cool. And I just thought it was a really nice moment and, you know, a terrific evening. But that moment to me as a photographer was really special. And so those are my three stories about technology. Two of them, they saved me, boy. And then the third one was definitely a bullseye. In the news. So here's a piece I saw on F-Stoppers, and I thought it was pretty good. I thought I'd let someone else nag you about this instead of me. That's what it comes down to. And the title of the piece is, Why I'm Starting a 365-Day Project in 2017. Now, normally I read you the first part of the story and let you go and read the whole thing, but today I'm going to read you the closing to the story and then you can go back and, you know, read all the details. Here's what the author said in closing. I strongly encourage everyone to give a 365 project a try. Even if you aren't in a rut creatively, it'll help you explore new avenues for your work. I also recommend having some sort of theme to give direction. For instance, I've decided that the final images will be in the 2.35 to 1 widescreen aspect ratio to aid my composition in my short film work, even though I'm shooting a still photography camera. My photography, editing, and filmmaker will all see something from this project. Have you tried a 365 project? I'd love to hear your experiences. And that was on F-stoppers. And of course, there's a link to the article in the show notes, just like there's a link to everything. I have, of course, waxed about, you know, personal projects, especially over the last month, because we're at the doorstep of 2017. I just think that at the start of the year is a great time to start a new project. I've mentioned many times how much the film project has really helped me continue to innovate in my photography and just also just give me lots of output on the personal side and not just limit my work to the professional side. Read this article if you have a moment on F-stoppers. It's short. He points out some good things. And like I said, we still have time. So a few days before 2017 for you to think about a personal project or a 365 project that you might want to try in this coming year. Review the Apple Photos book for photographers. So I have a couple more review copies of the book. The print book, the Apple Photos book for photographers, is out right now. It's on Amazon. It's at Rocky Nook, all that good stuff in bookstores. And I got a couple more review copies. I will say that a few of you have review copies and you have not posted a review that I'm aware of. So if you haven't posted your review yet and you have a review copy, it would be so nice if you did. I'm just saying. And then for some of you that maybe missed out on round one and you would like to read this book about creating a great workflow with photos for macOS, I have two copies, and all you have to do is write me at Derrick@thedigitalstory.com, D-E-R-R-I-C-K, and let me know that you want to review the book, and send me your mailing address and so that we can mail it to you. And I'm just going to go first come, first served on this. And if you are one of the people that get a review copy, if you would please review it, that would be even cooler. And for the rest of you, maybe you don't want to write a review, but maybe you really want to understand how cool Photos is. Like I said, the book is on Amazon. There's a link to it in the show notes, and it's also at Rocky Nook. Updates and such. Well, I have some great news, at least great news for members of our virtual camera club who live in the Midwest and the East Coast. I'm going to be out of Chicago again this year. I have met with them on the phone. We had a great meeting, had some great ideas. And I also had a meeting with Red River Paper, who are going to help me get out there again. Yay, Red River Paper. And so they firmly committed. Out of Chicago is firmly committed. And the whole thing is just going to be a blast. And to make it even more interesting, this is, you know, I'm so proud of the way I put this together. I really hope it works out great. To make it even more interesting, the workshop that I'm doing in June, the TDS workshop, starts the next day after Out of Chicago's over. And this is the rail adventure workshop where we start in Chicago. We meet in Chicago. We do some photography in Chicago. Then we get on the train and we have our class meetings and so forth on the train as we ride to New Orleans, and then we end up in New Orleans and we continue the workshop with street shooting in the French Quarter in beautiful, fascinating, and wonderful New Orleans, Louisiana. So the first part of the week will be the Out of Chicago conference that I'll be teaching at, and then we end that week with Out of Chicago, and then the next day we start our workshop. And by the way, if you're interested in that rail adventure workshop, you got to get on the reserve list. We haven't sent out the reservation forms yet, but they're the next set of reservation forms that will go out. And they'll be going out before too long. I'm hoping by the end of January, we'll be able to send them out, if not earlier. And of course, we have the reservation forms out right now for the San Francisco Street Shooting Workshop. If you're interested in this whole thing, make sure you get on the reserve list for the Chicago to New Orleans rail adventure. This is going to be a blast. The reason why I bring all this up is because, once again, Red River Paper is the engine that's driving this whole project. Because had they not made the commitment again to get me out to Chicago and to put me up in Chicago, then I just don't think I could have made it work, in all honesty. And so their commitment to me teaching about printing and about photography and how it all works together so beautifully and how you can be an artist that you never really dreamed that you could be. If it wasn't their commitment to that, none of this would happen. So these are people, as I said many times, they make great paper. They sell it to us at a reasonable cost. They have outstanding service and they support the photography community, and in particular, our virtual camera club, and responsible for getting me out to the Midwest this summer. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital story, and they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. While I'm in a thankful mood, I want to thank all of our Patreon members, and then a few of you who also chimed in on our support page. So, you know, there's two ways you can go. We have the Patreon method, which is really terrific because, you know, it's run by Patreon, so it's a very organized system. And those are smaller amounts on a monthly basis. And then, but you can do a one-shot thing. And we have a support page. And if you look at the digital story, and you can see there is an actual, up at the nav bar, there's an actual, you know, button. And you can go there and you can learn about advertising on the digital story. You can learn how to make a one-time support donation if you wish, if you don't like the monthly thing. And so, you know, all that information is right there. And so we had a couple people, I think it's becoming their annual tradition because these are, you know, longtime members of our virtual camera club, make a couple one-time donations also this month, and I really appreciate that. So whether you go the Patreon route, and there's a Patreon tile on all the pages of the digital story, or the one-time route by clicking the button up in the nav bar, we love it all, and it really helps us keep the show in the air. And thank you so much to all of you, regardless of how you pledge your support to this podcast and to the site. Well, I think that's going to do it for me this week. Well, we're getting ready to go into 2017, and I'm preparing for CES. I may talk about CES next week, or I may save it for the show after. I'm not sure yet, but I'm going to be at CES, of course, this year, and reporting on what's going on there. I have lots of other great stories lined up, so come back and join me next week. In the meantime, have a great week. Think about how you want to approach 2017, and then we'll all meet up again and move forward. Until then, thanks so much for joining me. See you next time. Bye-bye now.